And right now I'd like to welcome to our program Mark Weisbrot. He's a co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research based in Washington, D.C. Mark, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Sure thing. It's good to be here.
We've invited you to talk about the Venezuelan elections and the U.S. response. You have a recent article, in fact, just dated today from the Guardian newspaper in the U.K., titled "The United States Showed Its Contempt for Venezuelan Democracy." We're gonna get to that topic in a moment, but I thought it's always good to tell our listeners about the work that you do over the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
Sure. Oh, you want to know from me?
Yeah.
We do mostly economic research. We work on about half of our work is on the U.S. economy, and the rest is on the rest of the world, international economy, a lot on Latin America. And we try and make the issues accessible for people so that people can have more input into major decisions on economic policy.
Thanks, Mark. And in discussing the recent election on April 14th, in Venezuela, a presidential election precipitated by the death of Hugo Chavez, who died several weeks earlier from cancer after a long battle. It was a close election, and I'm wondering if you would, first of all, discuss the results of that election and you know, the charges of opposition candidate Enrique Capriles, his demand for a recount, and, you know, the trustworthiness of the Venezuelan electoral system. Certainly, you know, here in the United States, we know we have a lot of problems, but that's another story. But do tell us about your view of how Venezuelans conduct their elections and the trustworthiness of this result.
Yes, well, as you mentioned, the United States is too low a bar to even compare to when it comes to elections. If we have a close election, we don't really have any idea who won, because we have millions of votes that don't even have a paper trail. But Venezuela's system is very different. Jimmy Carter called it the best in the world. And it really is quite secure. You have a system where you have touchscreen voting. People push a button. The voter pushes a button on the machine. And there are a lot of other checks and security measures to make sure that there's not multiple voting or, you know, fraud or anything like that, you know, before they get to the voting screen. There's, you know, their fingerprints, there's identification, but they, you know, they have very high participation. I mean, make it very easy for people to participate, because they want everybody to vote. They had a 97% registration rate in the last election and 81% participation, which is something we'll never probably see in the United States. And so they, once they're in the voting booth, so they press a button on a touch screen, and then they get a paper receipt, comes out, prints out, and they get to look at the receipt and make sure that it matches their preference. And then that receipt they deposit in a ballot box, although the real vote is the machine, but they have the paper receipt. And so then at the end of when the polls close, in the presence of witnesses, and they actually have, you know, opposition and, you know, government side witnesses and also international observers, and they invite the neighborhood to come and witness this, this audit. It's on the site audit where they open the ballot box. They don't open all of them. They take a random sample of about 54%, 53% in this election. So they're randomly selected, the ballot boxes, and they open them, and they make sure it matches the machine count. And it does, because, you know, there's no cheating. And so that's a big audit, and it's done every election, and so they really know that the vote was secure. And that's why, you know, even the opposition representative on the National Electoral Council said there was no doubt about the result.
Now, with a narrow victory by Hugo Chavez's named successor, Vice President Nicolas Maduro. There was a very large and notable decrease in votes for Chavez's party, the United Socialist Party, from the previous election, Chavez's last, in October 2012. I believe there's just a 1 or 2 point gap in this election, with Maduro pulling it out, you know, with 220,000 votes. But why do you think this election was so much closer?
Well, it was 1.8 percentage points. And, yeah, that's about, it turned out to be about 270,000 votes. And I think that, well, one is Maduro is not Chavez. And so Chavez was very good, you know, as a candidate. And Maduro did not have the same skills. He also had been there a long time and built up a lot of trust among people. People didn't know who Maduro was. I think also you had, between the last election and this one, a number of negative events. You had a devaluation, which people didn't like. You had an uptick in inflation since the last election, and you had an increase in shortages of some basic foods and things in the stores. And so I think all of those were contributed to a shift of about, 600,000 voters moved from the Chavez camp to the challenger, Capriles.
Now, it's interesting to note, I've read some articles about the platform upon which Enrique Capriles ran on as the opposition candidate. He pledged to continue many of the social programs, as I understand it, that Hugo Chavez began, that are quite popular in the country and have had great results in terms of narrowing the inequalities in Venezuela. Because my understanding is that Capriles ran to the left, he may have kind of fuzzied up the differences between the parties quite a bit.
Yeah, he did that in both races. I think he tried to remake himself. It's actually the first time. It's interesting because, you know, for the longest time, the opposition in Venezuela, I mean, for most of the last 14 years, they kind of lived in denial, you know. They thought that, you know, Chavez was the problem, and they get rid of him, and everything can go back the way it was. And this was kind of the first, you know, election where they recognized, probably they got help, you know, from experts in the U.S. One of the leading, Democratic polling and political consulting firm in the United States, Greenberg Quinlan Rosner, was down there doing focus groups for them. And they figured out, I think, that, you know, this was not Chile or Poland or, you know, a country with a large right-wing population. This is a country where most of the population is fairly left. I mean, you know, there's some, you see polls, 39-40% say they want socialism. So he remade himself, even though he is comes from a very right-wing party, Primero Justicia, or Justice First, and he's a rich member of the elite, but he ran more kind of like pretending he was Lula, although Lula actually not only endorsed Chavez in the last election, but did a very glowing endorsement, which was played on TV there of Maduro as well. And so I think that, you know, this helped him. I think ultimately he didn't win because he couldn't convince more people that he really was this kind of person who wanted to, you know, he didn't convince them that the makeover was real.
Now, Mark, what's been the response of the United States to this most recent election on April 14th? There was a narrow margin, and as we know, opposition candidate Enrique Capriles demanded a recount. The government and the Electoral Council has said no, the checks and balances are in place. Secretary of State John Kerry has made some very controversial remarks, you know, pushing Venezuela to hold the recount that the opposition candidate wants. Where is this headed, do you think?
Well, first of all, you know, to understand the significance of what the United States did, it was very kind of a horrible thing to say, to tell this country. They announced on Monday that it was necessary for the legitimacy of the elections for them to have this recount, so-called recount. Recount is a misleading term because the paper ballots are not the basis of the vote, so it's not really a recount. What they were really demanding was that the remaining 47% of the ballots be audited in the same way, or the votes be audited in the same way that the ones that were done on site, you know, on the night of the election. And, you know, that's not really necessary because, you know, statistically speaking, and we actually did this calculation at CEPR over the weekend, you know, the odds that the other auditing the extra 47% would change the result, given the what the audit of the first 53% showed, those odds are less than 1 in 25,000 trillion.
25,000 trillion?
Yeah, it's actually a lot less than that. That's kind of like almost an upper bound.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, well, think about it. I mean, you have 53% is a gigantic sample. It's the absolute number that matters more, but it's you know, like 18,000 machines randomly selected, and you compare them to the paper, and they all match. What's the probability that the others aren't going to? It's infinitesimally small. And anybody with a background in statistics would see that intuitively. And so it is interesting that, you know, that anybody is trying to pretend that this recount could matter. I think they're, you know, it's obviously a political farce. And but the worst part about it is the United States is doing something that they haven't done for, you know, more than 10 years. They're intervening in a way openly and saying, and, you know, and saying, and trying to promote conflict in a way that they haven't done since they got involved in that military coup in 2002. And, you know, they were denounced, Lula denounced them, so did Evo Morales, and other leaders saw this as really outrageous. And, of course, everybody in Latin America, not only the left-wing governments, but even Mexico, the right-wing government, Mexico, non-left governments like Colombia, Guatemala, everybody, you know, congratulated Maduro and recognize the result immediately. I mean, it's a close. It's not that close. I mean, 1.8 percentage points with these kind of safeguards is not really in doubt. You know, it's not like our elections. It's not like the Mexican election in 2006 where you had a third of the margin. And, of course, you had half the ballot boxes didn't even add up, you know. They had gross discrepancies between, you know, you get a certain amount of blank ballots at the beginning, and then you have a certain amount of ballots that are voted and a certain amount left over, and those latter two, the leftover plus the voted ballots, are supposed to add up to what you started out with, right? And they didn't for about half a ballot box. Excuse me. So, you know, this was a very secure vote. There wasn't any doubt about it, and it was just completely outrageous from the point of view of the rest of the world. So the U.S. started, you know, they, as usual, they have an international campaign and they try to get put together a coalition of the willing. Who's going to take our position? We support the opposition. We want a recount. And the White House is saying it. So they got Spain at first, and, you know, that's a very right-wing government. And they got the Secretary General of the Organization of American States, Jose Miguel Insulza. And he supported their position. And then a couple days later, both Spain and the head of the OAS had to reverse themselves because they found themselves completely isolated. And that lay the United States with a coalition of just them, really. I think they might have gotten, you know, they might have gotten one or two other right-wing governments not to recognize. But they were the only ones saying you had to have this 100% audit.
Eight people. There were eight people that died in violence around Venezuela during protests about the election results. Are things really unstable there in Venezuela right now? You know, partly owing to the opposition demand for a recount and the U.S. contribution to that argument.
I think it's settled now. I mean, on Thursday night, the National Electoral Council agreed to do an audit of the remaining 46% or 47% of the machines, and Capriles kind of called off his protest and accepted that, although it's not clear exactly what's going to be done. But for now, it seems like it's settled. I mean, they'll probably complain, because it's not going to be that easy. I think it's going to be difficult to do the same kind of audit they did at the beginning, because this isn't a system that's based on the paper ballots. So, you know, I doubt that, you know, every ballot box was taken care of at the end. You know, it's not like a vote where the paper ballots are the vote, and, you know, you make sure they're carefully put away and organized and accessible and everything else. I mean, you know, some of them probably got lost. And so my guess is they won't be able to do exactly what they did on the night of the election. But that's the system they have. I mean, it's, you know, infinitely more secure than ours, where we have millions of people voting electronically and there's no paper trail.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to get Venezuela's help next time we have a horribly close and contested election in this country. I don't think it'll do much good, but we can try. Mark Weisbrod is our guest, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research based in Washington, D.C. And when Nicolas Maduro was reelected, he shuffled his cabinet. And owing to a lot of the problems in the country that you referred to earlier, high inflation, food shortages, blackouts, high crime rates, the oil company in some disarray, as reported in our press here. How do you think Maduro's going to be? How do you think he'll do in addressing some of these critical issues that you said contributed probably to a loss of the ruling party's vote on the April 14th ballot?
Well, he's got some serious challenges. You know, it's not anywhere near as bad as the press maintains it, you know. The media has this catastrophic view that everything's going to fall apart, and the trouble is they've been saying that for 14 years, and it hasn't happened. There's been only two recessions since 2002, and one of them was brought on by the oil strike. You know, the opposition controlled the oil industry for the first 4 years, and they used it to try and overthrow the government. So you can't blame the government for that recession. That was 2002-2003, very deep recession, when, you know, caused by just a strike. It wasn't actually a strike. I mean, it was more of the managers that shut down the company. It wasn't really the workers. And then you had in 2009, you had another recession that was caused by the world recession, which, of course, you had in a lot of countries in most of the hemisphere. So, you know, other than that, they've done fairly well, actually. So even though they've had the high inflation and the, you know, recurrent devaluations and definitely a rising crime rate in the things that you mentioned. So it's not like the United States in 2006, where any economist looking at the United States economy, unfortunately, most of them didn't notice it, but you could, in fact, say in 2006 that we had a gigantic housing bubble, $8 trillion bubble that was going to burst, and that you know, you couldn't say exactly when it would burst, but you knew that the longer it went, the worse it was going to be. It was going to cause a terrible recession when it burst. That you could say. We actually said it, of course. And that's an unsustainable situation. Whereas Venezuela's problems, they're unsustainable over a longer period, but they can also go on for a long time like this. They can still lose an election, though. So it's not like the economy is going to collapse, but it could get bad enough. So they really do have to do something, because you know, under the Venezuelan constitution, I think it's the only one in the world where you can recall the president halfway through his term. So the opposition already said in 3 years, you know, we're going after you. And so he's basically got 3 years to make it better and, you know, get the country to vote for him again.
Mark, we only have about a minute or two left, but maybe you can speak to how secure do you think the legacy of Hugo Chavez and his socialist Bolivarian revolution is in the hands of Nicolas Maduro and the domestic as well as the international institutions that Chavez set up throughout the hemisphere?
Well, I think all that is here to stay. I mean, first of all, internally, you know, after they got control of the oil industry, they reduced poverty by half, extreme poverty by 70%, and that's just measuring cash income, of course. They still, you know, that doesn't count the millions of people that got health care and, you know, increased access to education, including college with free tuition. So those things are not going to go away. The internationally, I think it's even stronger. I mean, you saw the response to the attempt to delegitimize the election. I mean, the UNASUR had a meeting, you know, the Union of South American Nations, which Chavez helped, of course, organize, played a huge role. And they, and then most of the, almost all the presidents went, I think there were 16 or 17 presidents went to attend Maduro's inauguration to show their solidarity and make it clear that they weren't going to tolerate any attempt to delegitimize this election. So this is the kind of, you know, regional unity that you have. You have institutions, you have the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States. They also issued a statement that's like the alternative to the OAS that has everybody except the U.S. and Canada. All these things are going to go on. They're really institutionalized. And you can see that because even the non-left governments are, they all have the same position regionally as the left governments. It's really been, the whole rules of the game have been changed both domestically and internationally.
Well, Mark, it's great to have you here tonight to kind of explicate and analyze what's going on in Venezuela, an important nation that we're all watching here, at least some of us, and certainly the State Department and the CIA are too. But, Mark, leave us, if you would, with the web address for your organization, the Economic and Policy Research Center for Economic and Policy Research, where you talk about international issues as well as domestic economic issues as well.
Sure, it's CEPR.net. That's the Center for Economic and Policy Research, CEPR.net.
It's always great talking with you, Mark. I appreciate you making time tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
That's Mark Weisbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and CEPR.net is the web address there.